Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, April 23rd. I'm Ray Graff. They're all seasoned up. They did a show yesterday that we recorded. The Gardeners are back for the second time in 24 hours. They get to talk to me, and they're not too happy about it. Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum, and Dale Isla Riggs of the Berry Patch. Say, do you have a gardening question? Call now, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. Gardening, live and in person. Fred, Dale Isla, and Greg, your calls coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. The Gardeners are back and ready to take your questions. Beautiful day today to get out there and dig in the dirt. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York, but more about that in a moment. Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery, a gardening destination in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. And Dale Isla Riggs is owner and operator of the Berry Patch, a first-generation diversified farm in Steventown, New York. We welcome your calls now, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Call early. The show gets very crowded, and there are a few open lines at the moment. You can email as well, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. We have Fred, we have Greg, we have Dale Isla, and we have you. Gang, welcome back. I know that we've seen each other recently. What a show that was yesterday over at the Landis Arboretum.
So much fun.
A lot of fun.
It was tremendous. It was, and the audience was fantastic.
Yeah.
So if you don't know, we did a live WAMC on the road event, which we recorded live at the Landis Arboretum. It was a gardening show, and people had their questions on 3x5 cards, and we had a blast. And Fred, the Landis is a how many years have you been asking me to come? And it's great.
Absolutely, yeah. It's an awesome spot. And, it's, like I say, we're in the middle of nowhere, but really close to everything. And, a little oasis out there. It's a beautiful spot.
And the event center is beautiful.
Yeah, it was nice.
That view over the valley can't be beat.
No, it's an awesome view.
Well, if you were one of those people who came to the show and hung out and chatted with us and asked a question or two and watched the show, thank you very much. I suspect that we'll probably do it again next year.
Very cool.
It was very, very good time.
It was tremendous.
Yes. How come you didn't bring that one up in a live show? All right, so we have a lot of emails already, so let's get to it. Oh, by the way, Dale Isla, you have some big news, right?
Yeah, I just wanted to let people know that we have three awesome summer, well, we have more than three awesome summer crew members, but three of our summer crew members are in the top 10 students at Berlin High School are graduating this year. So
That's
they just
great.
Announced the top 10, and three of them are Berry Patch crew members. So just wanted to say that we're proud of them. Congratulations to Lillian, who is valedictorian, Charlie, who is number 5, and Elliot, who is number 8. And we are proud of you. You are all fine young women, and keep it up.
Outstanding.
Very
that's
cool.
Great news. By the way, if you're wondering when we will air this live show we recorded yesterday at the Landis, the plan is to air it in this time slot on Memorial Day. So you'll get a lot of gardening coming up in May, and that'll be the special show we run on Memorial Day. For now, though, we are live in Studio A, 800-348-2551, or voxpop@wamc.org. Paul in Malta writes, I'm looking for recommendations on grass seed that will grow in highly shaded areas. Most of my side and backyards only get a couple hours of direct sunlight each day. Most of the time, the sun is filtered through tall pines. Is there a seed that will grow well without a lot of sun?
Well, I think if Bob were here, he would say no, that grass does need sun. But there are mixes called shade-tolerant mixes, and they're usually 90% a mix of fescue. So if you're looking at a grass seed mix, simply make sure there's a lot of fescue in it. It probably, if it says shade, you know, sun and shade or shady mix, it probably does have that. And make sure that it's a mixture of them, that there's more than one species in there, you know, two, three, four even. Maybe a little bit of perennial rye to kind of get it going a little sooner, because those fescues do take a little longer to germinate. But that said, you know, if it's heavy shade and there's large pines are shading it, and that means that the roots are there, which means the moisture's also not there, it is tricky to grow grass there.
Uh-huh. Okay. Anybody else?
Yeah, I mean, possibly a ground cover.
I was going
to
say.
You know, as opposed to grass, if it is really one of those shady spots.
Yep. You know, one of the people yesterday brought up asking about moss. So if it's not a dry spot, letting some moss grow in there is
the
always nice.
Yeah, moss is there now.
Right.
If moss is there now,
yeah.
Leave it
now,
for sure.
If not, you know, maybe something. We have a lot of vinca that is under some pines that is doing well, and it's a nice ground cover.
That can definitely tolerate the shade.
Yeah.
All right.
And it's blooming
several,
right now.
Several native ferns that can spread, you know, a hay-scented fern in particular is good.
And possibly limbing up a few trees would let a little bit more light in and enable them, especially in certain patches. Like, you might not be able to grow grass through the entire shade area, but you might be able to grow grass in some of the shade area and then maybe mix it up with some ground cover, so it doesn't have to all be exact, but it still works.
It's Gardening Today with Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs. Nick, by the Ashokan Reservoir, was at the live event yesterday at the Landis, and he has a question here. Horsetail, maybe? Daylilies? There's a new weed for our area as of this year, says Nick, that has been confirmed by a mentor gardener from down the street. We think it's from landscaping trucks that drive by at like 70 miles an hour. Also, I have two purple daylilies inside the fence that I brought home from a job last year. The base is a foot wide. Should I surround the bottom with concrete, metal, both, or just move them out because they'll grow crazy no matter what? So Nick, who's a regular correspondent, sent about 17 pictures, which I showed to you guys. Now, it's a kind of a no-no to send pictures on the radio because most people can't see them. You had a look, panel. What do you think?
Yeah, we think it's a little annual mustard that is a non-native plant that has little white flowers to begin with and then very long, elongated seed heads that look a little bit like, what did he call it? I forget. He said one other name. Anyway.
Lily?
Horsetail.
Oh, yeah, horsetail.
Oh, horsetail.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, not horsetail.
Just
yeah.
In a very rudimentary way, it looks like horsetail, but it's there's just seed heads. And this is a pretty common weed these days in the garden, spreading, you know, pretty easily. And the best thing to do is get them as soon as you see them, and better when they're in flower, little white four-petaled flowers, rather than when you see those seed heads.
Right, get them before they go to seed.
Yeah, and those photos are showing the seed heads, so get them out now so that those seeds don't disperse.
And what about the question about the lilies?
Yep. So, you know, lilies, they do well. You could, you know, I don't think you need to try to quarantine them in.
Okay.
I think, you know, if he doesn't want them in that spot, you know, to me, move them. But otherwise, lilies are not that hard to get rid of compared to a lot of the other things we deal with. They can be aggressive, but you know, a lot of times it's a good thing.
Jill in Mountainville has a question for Dale Isla. Can I prune out just one dead cane from my high bush blueberry right now?
Oh, absolutely. I was, before I came in here, I was finishing up some pruning in my own blueberries. So, it's a little later than ideal, but if it's dead or not very thrifty, be sure to get it out now, and that directs the growth to the good shoots the rest of the year.
Yeah, great. Great time to really focus on that last minute, you know, pre-bloom pruning of fruits, you know, fruit trees even, you know, they might be coming into flower, but if you can get it done now, you're so much better. And then all that other, you know, ornamental spring flowering plants, you do those in about a month after they bloom.
Yeah.
And Rob writes in, would an upside down tomato plant do well in an enclosed back porch that gets plenty of sun? Upside down tomato plant.
I think he's talking about a container.
Yeah, you're growing it so it has to, from phototrophism, is going to turn around and revert to upright. So they grow them. I've seen trees grown that way before.
Yeah, I think they actually hang down.
Yeah, I've seen those. They've advertised them on TV.
The container is sort of a bag that you plant, and so the soil doesn't fall out.
Right,
it's
but
all
then
sealed
it
in there.
Eventually turns back up, I would imagine.
Little curls.
Curls.
Keep
falling
down.
Yeah. It sounds to me, so it's an enclosed porch. Is that what he said?
Yep. but yeah. gets plenty of sun?
It's going to get plenty of sun for the plant to live, but probably not enough sun to produce fruit.
Ah, okay.
So,
especially with the roof of that.
Yeah,
enclosed.
Right, exactly.
Tomatoes like a lot of sun.
All right, we'll do two more emails very quickly here, then we'll take a break and then hit the phones. It's Gardening Today with Dale Isla Riggs, Greg Ward, and Fred Breglia. And this email from Kay in Berkshire County. My home sits on a steep, grassy hillside, very difficult to mow. I'd like to establish a wildflower and natural vegetation hill. How can I best accomplish this?
Yeah, it's, you know, you certainly can just allow the lawn to expand. You'll get, you know, a lot of lawn plants that will turn into, you know, sort of meadow-looking grasses. If you want to add some, you know, non-grasses to that, you could be certainly adding various native plants like some coneflower. You could be adding, some bee balm. You could be adding some kinds of daisy form things like Rudbeckia.
Yep.
All of those things could be put in there, but literally just stopping mowing and doing it once a year with some larger equipment would be adequate.
Yeah, and putting in some of those, like you had mentioned, the echinacea and the rudbeckia, those ones, when you get the wildflower mixes, they tend to do better.
Yep.
So if you had those into that, you introduced them into that area, they're going to produce, let them go to seed. Mm. And now over time, you might end up seeing a lot more of those guys come up too.
Yeah, and some asters for some fall color.
Yep, goldenrod too. You know, it's a weed for a lot of people, but it's a really good native plant.
Oh, I'm very allergic to that.
Fantastic for pollinators.
Once established too, it's really good at keeping the undesirables, as they say, out. The non-native plants out, because it's pretty aggressive.
Okay, one more here, very quickly, and then we'll take a break. It's Gardening Today. 800-348-2551. We'll hit the phones in a moment. Marty and Hadley writes, I have some beautiful zucchini and cucumber starts that are inside. I started them early. They're in the house in a beautiful sunny spot. They are now flowering. How can I pollinate them? Too soon to put them outside.
Well, you can get in there with a Q-tip. I think they're probably flowering because they're under a lot of stress right now. And I would actually try to get them out as soon as you can and just put a couple hoops with some row cover or have something out there for keeping them warm at night on some of these chilly nights. We actually planted our first zucchini in our high tunnel 2 days ago. And we're doing the same thing in our high tunnel on these cold nights that are keeping me up.
Yeah.
So I would put them out and I would actually pinch off those flowers and let the energy go to let the whole plant develop.
Yeah. Would you consider putting them up potting, putting them in a larger container?
Certainly. That is a good point. If I'm not sure what size they're in right now, but if they're in a 4-inch pot, put them in a 1-gallon pot and then plant them outside in 2 weeks.
Let's take a quick break here. It's Gardening with Fred Breglia, Dale Isla Riggs, and Greg Ward. 800-348-2551. Little Thad Jones here. Frank West at Thad Jones and Company there, and they were big time in the Basie band in the 50s and 60s. And somebody, I want to thank this person over the year today. Some anonymous listener sent me today this beautiful 8x10 publicity headshot of Basie from 1943.
Wow.
And it's gorgeous. I'm going to frame that thing. So whoever you are who sent that,
that's awesome.
Thank you very much. You know I'm a Basie nut. It is Gardening Today. Dale Isla Riggs, Greg Ward, Fred Breglia join us. 800-348-2551. All right, we'll get back to the emails in a little bit. Let's go now to Catherine in Newburgh. Hello, Catherine.
Hello. How are you on this beautiful gardening day?
It's beautiful, yeah. How are you?
So I had a question. First-time planter of garlic. I planted it last fall, and the scapes are coming up. They're about 6 inches long. So my question is, if I harvest the scapes to use them in salads or pasta, will it affect the bulbs? And when should I expect to pull the bulbs up?
So we think you're not seeing scapes yet. You're seeing the foliage. And you, so you don't want to do anything to that foliage. You want them to continue to grow. The scapes are going to be these flower spikes that come out of the center of that, and that shouldn't happen until around mid-June at the earliest.
Right, or early July when you see them, or end of June at least. Yeah, but when with the scapes, what I do is I wait till they make almost one circle, and then I cut them off. Some people have, I guess, techniques where they want to pull them out. I feel like that sometimes can damage a plant, so I actually go in and I cut them when they make one round loop. I don't know if that is what you guys do, but that's what worked for me.
We do the same. We cut them, and even in our high tunnel, we are usually not getting scapes until late May, early June.
Yeah.
So you have this foliage. It's all of our foliage. Everyone who's growing them outside looks just like the same. It's this nice little sort of onion foliage coming up 6 or 8 inches high probably right now. And so that, you know, you could be adding nutrients to that to get them to keep going. If you haven't done that before, some kind of fertilizer would be helpful. Otherwise, some kind of mulching material so you are less likely to have to weed around them. And then you just walk away for another 6 weeks or so, and then start looking for those scapes in June.
Yeah, and to answer her question, does it affect the bulbs? It does. You will get a larger bulb if you take the scapes off because more energy will go to the scape. And then I harvest my garlic when the first three leaves on the bottom turn yellow. So when the third one turns yellow, that's kind of getting close. Usually end of July, August.
Usually you're removing the scapes, and within a couple of weeks after that, the plants start to yellow.
Yep.
Catherine, that worked for you?
Perfect. Yeah. I got them all from the Saugerties Garlic Festival last year. So
nice.
Keep the vampires away, and hopefully it'll be good garlic.
So good. Put it on a pizza. Delicious.
I met a one of the audience members yesterday. Regularly does 1,500 garlic cloves.
Wow. That's a lot.
Gets 1,500 bulbs.
That's a lot. It must sell some of that, I'm assuming.
He says he gives it away.
Gives it away.
I gave him my address.
Person to have as a friend.
Absolutely.
Dale Isla, very quickly before the next call, you mentioned this several times yesterday and you just mentioned it again today. What is a high tunnel?
So a high tunnel is basically an unheated greenhouse. Some people, there's very simple high tunnels where people just take PVC pipe, a length of PVC pipe or metal pipe, and bend it and put a few of them in a row and cover it with plastic. Yeah. So you're getting a greenhouse effect early. Or there's high tunnels like ours, which are full-blown greenhouse frames with double inflated poly on them to moderate the temperature and hold it in place. And for us, it's all about controlling the environment and keeping the rain off.
But does it do anything to the temperature of the soil?
Yes, it warms it up sooner. So like right now, soil temperatures outside at our farm this morning were 44 degrees, and soil temperatures inside our high tunnel this morning were 58 degrees.
And you take that every day in the spring?
Yeah, I can look at it anytime on my phone.
Oh, aren't you clever? All right, the number to call here is 800-348-2551. Janet is in Monticello. Hello, Janet.
Hi there, Ray. I bought hyacinths and tulips in pots around Easter time, and I'm concerned about when to plant the bulbs because I think if I don't wait till fall, they have a tendency to rot. Is that right, or should I just go ahead and plant them?
Yeah, they don't rot so much, but they can still keep growing and storing energy back into the bulb. They'll do it in the pots that you have, but they'll do a better job of it if you can put them in the ground where those soil temperatures are actually cooler and gives it more extended season. So I would go, if you have time, go out to the garden you had in mind and dig the hole, you know, deeper, few inches deeper than the pot, slide the pot off and drop the whole thing, foliage and all, into the ground. If there's any little seed heads on top, you can cut those off, but don't remove the leaves until they're really yellow. If they're already yellow, you can remove the leaves now. Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Janet, sounds good. Thanks.
Thanks for the call. It's 800-348-2551. So Bill wrote in hours before today's show, and I had his email buried under some stuff. So let's just do one email at this time. We'll get back to the emails later in the show. Bill writes, 6 years ago, we transplanted two healthy rhododendrons to the eastern wall of our house. We used Hollytone and peat during planting. They received 3 to 4 hours of direct morning sunlight. While they remained healthy for the first 2 to 3 years, their condition has steadily declined over the last 3 years. Despite regular watering during dry spells and occasional fertilizing, the plants have become spindly with thinner inner foliage and pale green leaves. Additionally, the number of blossoms has decreased annually. Anything we can do to restore their health and fullness? And that's from Bill.
I think the first thing is a pH test.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say.
Yep, me too. It's, I mean, that the site, I know it came from the same area, but it isn't always the same. So that could be a factor. Also, sometimes when you transplant them, they're stressed. And if they're stressed, they might have an insect potential, like a borer.
So taking a sample of the soil so that you know that it's acidic, you definitely need the soil pH to be, you know, at least low sixes, you know, so that 7 is the neutral and you want it to be a little acidic. That's the smaller number. So 6.5, 6, 5.5 would be ideal.
Yep.
And if it's not, you can affect that soil with a soil acidifier. Usually it's a sulfur, granulated sulfur product, and the bag kind of gives you recommendations. It's always a little tricky. That's a long-term thing. Fertilizing the plants with something with some reasonable nitrogen. I think you may have mentioned Hollytone. Did you mention that?
Yep. You did mention
Hollytone. Yeah, it has some nitrogen in it. You could use something with a little more nitrogen at least this year that will also certainly help sort of mediate or moderate that pH issue, at least temporarily.
And if the pH is high, you can use aluminum sulfate to help lower the pH, or just granular sulfur. I a lot of times the pH around the foundation is very different from the pH that is in the rest of your yard.
And because of the concrete or brick or whatever.
Right, which maybe alkalize them. Yep.
All right, Nancy in Castleton also has a rhododendron issue and maybe the same one. Nancy, you're on. Go ahead. Maybe it is the same one. Hello, Nancy.
8 years ago, they put a,
Nancy,
a natural gas pipe in, and all the rest of them have done fine, but there's one that's just not making it. If I cut the dead part off, will it come back?
We missed the very beginning of that. You cut out, but I think everybody gets the gist.
Did they dug them up and replanted them?
No, they just dug a trench next to it.
Okay, so that one probably, my guess is, got damaged. They probably cut a bunch of the roots, especially when they dig a trench and not tunnel a trench. So, you know, most likely it cut roots. It stressed out the plant. Rhododendrons do rejuvenate fairly well, though. So, to answer your question, can you cut the dead part out? Absolutely. I would scratch it, you know, on the bark, just make sure that it is indeed dead.
It's dead.
Okay, yep, so that part can get removed. And then if the rhododendron itself doesn't look too good, they often can be rejuvenated by cutting them back pretty severely, especially before growth occurs. And although we're getting, depending on your where you're located, you might be able to do that now. You might be a little bit too late for that.
Yeah. The only other thing I was going to mention, I forgot, but I was going to mention with the other rhododendron problem, but these actually might be the same thing, is if they're a little deeper than they used to be, in other words, if the gas line people came in, you put the soil back, but the soil ended up on top of that one that's stressed. And the same with the other gentleman, if he planted those plants a little too deep, that can create a slow decline. Rhododendron are really sensitive to having more than an inch of mulch on top of the
that's
soil.
That's right. Yeah. And over the years of looking at trees and plants, I would say that I've never seen too many plants decline from being planted a little bit too high, but lost count of how many that I've seen decline because they're planted a little too low. And that's a good point.
Yeah.
It very well might have not matched the grade.
So you can do that. If you think they put soil on top from the gas line, just you can go out there and start just raking it down until you find those really, they're like almost thread size, fine roots on a rhododendron that will start to show up as a little mat just off of the stem, off the trunk. And once you see those, add an inch of mulch, and that's all you want. If there's soil and things, remove it.
All right, Nancy.
Okay.
Well, thank you for calling. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's the Gardening Show. Greg Ward, Dale Isla Riggs, and Fred Breglia. Teresa's in Stillwater. Hello, Teresa.
Hello, hello. What am I doing?
I don't know.
Are you there?
I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what you're doing either.
I've got to take you off of speakerphone. Yeah,
it'll be nice, but, you know, you sound okay.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead. Give it a shot.
But I can't hear you well.
So oh, yeah, that's a good point. All right. I'll wait for a moment.
Are you there?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Yes.
Okay. There we are. We're back in business.
Excellent.
Okay. I have a 6 or 7 year old climbing yellow rose and a number of questions, but it's coming back or, you know, greening up for the new season. And the main, like what would I would call it, the main stem, the biggest one, has not greened up at all, whereas the ones around it have greened up. Now, my son's chickens came over and they started digging in this plot, and I don't know if they damaged something. Will that eventually green up, you know, have some green in it,
yeah,
make me think this nice big long stem is going to flower?
So we often mention that scratch test, you know, where you just take your pruner, or even if you're a tough person, your fingernail, and you take the bark off of the stem, just scratch, you know, watch out for
just
the thorns, and as high as possible, up, you know, wherever that is, 3 or 4 or 5 feet, and just see if it's green, that stem you're concerned with. And if it is, then yes, it is definitely going to sprout.
Even though the rest of it is all brown.
So that is the question. So brown is never a good color for, you know, live things, and when you scratch it, it will not be green underneath, and then you'll know that no, that stem is finished.
That whole, the biggest one mm-hmm. is gone for some reason. Maybe it's not the chicken's fault, but
one of the great things about roses is they rejuvenate all the time, and sounds like you have plenty of other smaller stems that are, I assume, doing pretty well. So you can take out the big one. Usually, you know, pruning back a rose a little bit, even a climber every spring is a good idea. And certainly, you know, so you could reduce the smaller ones by a third or so. And if that main one is brown and dry inside, take that out completely.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I've never pruned it because I always wanted to make it, you know, it's on a trellis to make it spread out.
Yeah, but it is sort of a...
Prune them occasionally, or every spring. Then
you just make the plant stronger by doing that. It's going to do what it's going to do, and if you like the way it's growing, I'm not demanding that you prune it, but it will. If you prune it and fertilize it, it will probably look even better this year.
All right, Teresa, thank you very much for the call, Joan. Well, we all talked to Joan yesterday at the live event.
Absolutely.
And here's Joan now. Joan in Schenectady. Joan, what are you doing? Where are you? Are you outside?
I love all of you. You guys are fabulous.
Are you outside? You sound like you're in a wind tunnel.
Oh, no. Actually, I'm near a window, but I am on my earphones. Can you hear me okay?
Okay. Yes, go ahead.
Now I'm moving inside my house.
All right.
So you all know how much I appreciate you. I'm moving inside my house.
What do you got today?
On this glorious day.
Thanks for coming yesterday, by the way.
Oh, thank you all. Thank you all. I'm still elevated. Thank you.
My blood pressure is still elevated. Go ahead.
I was enjoying you so much yesterday.
All right.
So, you all taught me how to identify sedges from grass.
Yep.
Thank you. During No Mow May, and I'd love to hear more about that, during No Mow May, what's the best way to get rid of the things I've identified as sedges from a carpet of what is probably grass?
What's a sedge, by the way, panel? I have
no
idea.
Well, it looks like a grass, but if you felt the blade of it, it would have more of an edge to it.
Okay.
We learned it back in college. Sedges have edges.
And don't use your lips.
Yep, that's right. And I think, you know, just weeding them out, you know, if it's, you know, No Mow May doesn't mean you can't pull weeds.
I would just like to say that pretty much every sedge you can find in your lawn or in the forest or otherwise is a native plant. And if you don't mow, they actually have an interesting look. You just have to sort of get used to it. They're usually sort of a nice little tuft. They do flower in sort of a grassy sort of way. And so if you're not going to mow them, you might find it interesting to walk around the yard and try to see how many different kinds you have.
Ah.
Ooh.
That'll give you something
and
to do.
How do I know that?
Count. How would you know which kind is which? They will look different. You'll it's subtle sometimes.
Yeah, but they all do actually do have a distinct look.
And they're green?
Yeah.
Some of them have a little more yellowish tone to them, but it's overall green.
Any pasture, any field you go in has sedges mixed with grasses. They're hard to tell apart from any distance until you look right at them.
So why not leave them?
That's what I'm saying. You
know, yeah.
It's generally what we do with them.
Later on, they mow up pretty well and tolerate that. So
they do.
I wouldn't worry about them. I would enjoy them.
Thank you. Let's work better.
Hey, there you go.
Joan, you know, yesterday, as you were walking out, we talked about how perfectly you time your calls because they're right before that second break in the show. And that's where we are, Joan. So we'll see you next time. Thanks for calling. 800-348-2551. That's the number. We'll check the email bag at foxpop@wamc.org right after this.
Support comes from Curtis Lumber, specializing in kitchen design with cabinets from Wellborn and Marilat and quartz countertops from Cambria. American-made products sold locally. CurtisLumber.com. Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, cosmetic plastic surgeon performing facelifts, brow lifts, rhinoplasty, and blepharoplasty since 1996. A surgeon's hands, a woman's touch. CAPEKplasticsurgery.com. And Washington County Fiber Tour, celebrating 33 years. Farm tours, fiber mills, highlighting fiber arts and animals. April 25th and 26th, 10 to 4. WashingtonCountyFiberTour.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff here, and the gang's all here for gardening, Dale Isla Riggs. Well, not all here, actually. Bob Graves couldn't be with us today, but he'll be back for the next one, hopefully. Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch, Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, and Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum. Couple emails, then we'll get back to the phones. Mike in Rexford writes, tall asparagus plant. I bought an asparagus plant at the end of the season last year, kept it in a sunroom. Over the winter, it grew several shoots about 5 feet tall with very fine lacy branches. Now, I don't know what to do with it. The shoots really can't support themselves. How should I transfer this to grow outside?
So generally with asparagus, we cut those back in the fall. And then, you know, in theory, new shoots are coming up now. But I've got to think that shoot, that foliage has got to be done. So I'm thinking he's going to cut that back and plant it, right?
It is kind of odd. Like, usually, if you're getting something in the fall, the foliage would be turning yellow.
Right, you would think that would turn yellow and have kind of died back in the fall.
So I'm wondering if it's not a tropical fern called an asparagus plant.
Oh, interesting.
A little bit.
It should have went yellow in the fall.
Yeah, if it is asparagus, though, that the kind that you harvest, definitely planting it in the ground would be the first step.
Yeah, I mean, asparagus can stay quite green. I've never seen it grown during the winter. If it was in a sun space,
it would hold that green color for a while.
It's the cold that makes ours turn yellow. And we don't actually cut ours back till the spring because we like to have it accumulate snow during the winter. It helps the crowns a bit more. We actually just cut ours a couple days ago. But yeah, I would just get it planted outside. But I think, like Greg says, make sure that it is edible asparagus because it should be starting to put up new sprouts now if it is.
So this tropical bush that they call asparagus,
no
is
relation.
That poisonous? It will kill you.
No, and it doesn't, you know, doesn't create a bud that you can harvest.
Okay.
You know, stem.
All right.
So you wouldn't see your classic shoot.
No.
Yeah, but I will say, I mean, 5 feet tall is about. Our asparagus gets to 5-6 feet
so
tall, so
it's probably hardy asparagus.
It probably is, and I have seen them hold the green longer, even in my yard. I mean, I wait till they pretty much turn yellow before I cut them back. But sometimes there's quite a bit of green mixed with that yellow.
Yeah, and
snow's flying.
If they were kept inside all winter,
you can see it retaining that green longer.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
They probably grew again. Too, possibly,
right. Yeah. But they should be putting up some sprouts now.
All right. Doreen has two questions. One, is it okay to cut back a ginkgo tree right now? It has tiny leaf buds on it. And also, is it okay time to cut down the leggy brown branches on butterfly bushes that have no sign of fresh green growth yet?
Yep. So I would not prune the ginkgo right now. I'd wait for that to grow. And I would, at this point, summer prune that, like middle of June.
Okay.
And then you're going to see what the new growth is doing. I mean, you could have dormant pruned that plant, but not a great time when it's starting to bud out.
All right.
And then butterfly bush, like we've talked about with the scratch test, you know, this winter I'm going to assume that they've died right back, in which case you could cut those down and let the new growth come. I can't imagine that the stems on those butterfly bush are green. So after this past winter.
It's been, you know, it was warm and then a little cold. And so usually if they've died back, they have this little massive shoots at the base that will then rejuvenate the whole plant. So you're hopefully looking for those, so you would cut it back, but I would still leave maybe a foot of wood, whether it's alive or dead, just so that you're not taking it right to the ground.
All right, to Father Tony up north writes in, the recent cold snap seems to have taken a toll on my just about flowering magnolia tree.
Yeah.
And by the way, I have heard that from so many people.
That happened to us at the Arboretum, too. We were peak bloom and blast with that cold.
Well, yeah. Father Tony wants to know, are the flowers going to come back or are they done for the season?
Next year you'll have a bunch more flowers. But yeah, unfortunately, it's not going to set buds and reflower this year.
There's a few magnolias that bloom a bit later. There's it's called the Little Girl series. Jane, I can't think of the Anne. And there's one third one. They tend
Elizabeth
to have,
too. Elizabeth,
and then the yellow forms.
And the yellows would all probably be good because they didn't nearly open yet.
The yellow ones are late or very late. And then these Little Girl series, they're more of a purple rather than that mauvey pink that the saucers are. But they open up about, they're starting to open up now. And they, at least in the Berkshires, they all made it through.
Yeah, and our yellows and later ones are all looking pretty good. But all the whites that we had and any of the early pinks.
That probably happens every third or fifth year, right? We get they come out and then we get a freeze.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I get it because it was like, I was looking at our collection and I was like, wow, they're looking really, really good. And then bam.
Yep, brown.
All right, one more email now and then we'll head back to the phones. And this is from Elizabeth. Planting tomato plants before Mother's Day. It was suggested on a gardening YouTube video to plant tomato seedlings before the suggested time if one has spare plants. This is a gamble, but may allow tomatoes to be available early. What's your opinion?
Commercial growers do that all the time.
Really?
Yes. You know, we all recognize that it's a risk, and we all take measures to protect them if it gets cold. What I look at the most is soil temperatures, and there's not really much point in putting a tomato plant in the ground if the soil temperatures are still below about 55 degrees.
Yeah.
But if it's over 55 degrees and the forecast is looking good, sure.
Okay.
Put them in the ground, and you might be getting earlier tomatoes.
And then maybe do something to protect them if you start to see a cold snap coming our way.
Have a sheet or something.
They can get cold for days in June.
It can.
Absolutely.
You want to be ready to protect them no matter what.
Yeah.
It's Gardening Today with Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isler Riggs. The number is 800-348-2551. And Sky is in Great Barrington. Sky, go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. What a great show. I got a small rose bush potted from a local grocery store because it was just so unusual. I couldn't resist, and I put it in my garden, but it's never grown much, and I'm wanting to move it. It wintered over, but it's kind of spindly, and I wanted to move it into a sunnier spot. Is it healthy enough, you think, to move it?
Well, this is definitely
if I should cut it back.
This is definitely the time to move it, and so digging it right up and putting it in that sunnier spot right, you know, today or this week would be ideal. You know, it sounds like it's a miniature rose. You know, that's they usually kind of do look a little spindly. They have very, you know, fine stems, fine wood, and so if it's grown a fair amount, you could certainly cut it back. But because you're not sure, because you're moving it, I think just transplanting it, watering it in really well, and waiting for it to start to grow out and consider doing some light pruning later in May.
Should I fertilize it?
Yeah, for sure. Roses are always hungry.
And do you put the fertilizer in the hole before you put it in or just around it?
So you can work it into the soil, top layer of soil after you've planted, or you can work it into the soil that you're putting in around it as well.
Yeah, and this is a really good time to fertilize just about everything, too.
Okay, and I had another quick question.
All right.
My neighbor was thinning out her, she was straightening up her garden, and she had some extra irises, the bulbs that she gave me. I know they're not called bulbs. I can't remember what they're called. But anyway, tubers.
Tubers, yeah.
And I couldn't get them into the ground really fast because it froze up again. So I put them in pots, but they're kind of shallow. Will they do okay in the pots, or should I put them into the ground when it gets warm again?
These have the tubers that look like the ginger you buy in the grocery store. Yeah, so those are German iris, and I would go ahead and plant them right in the garden.
Yep.
The big thing with German iris is not to plant them too deep. You could almost see the tuber when you're done planting.
Right. Yeah, they're always popping out there.
Right.
And that's look at them.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to have them right there at the surface. That's where they do best.
All right, Sky, thank you very much. Let's go to Little Falls and Jim. Hello, Jim, you're on.
Yeah, hello, guys. Thanks for taking the call. And I'm just checking with you for Creeping Charlie. I've got it started in my yard, and or Creeping Charlie or ground ivy. I'm not sure what they call it, but how do you deal with that?
So that's a really obnoxious lawn weed. Usually, usually it's doing well because the soil's compacted, because it's you've had some stresses out there from either, again, the too much compaction or some drought occurred and the grass, the actual perennial grass died, and then the Creeping Charlie says, hey, I'm going to jump right in there.
Huh.
So renovating that spot, here it is, it's spring, right? And everyone has a lot of energy in the spring. So going out there and kind of raking it up, pulling that out, loosening that soil, maybe adding some compost or some kind of organic matter to that soil to make it a better quality, and then putting down, you know, treating those areas with grass seed, a nice perennial mix of grass seed would be the best thing to do.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was wondering. And what about fertilizer and weed and feed or something? Or is that
You have, you know, weed and feed, you know, has this fertilizer in it, obviously, and then it has this herbicide in it. And some of the herbicides in those mixes are listed for Creeping Charlie. It's always good to check, make sure that it's listed on the label. But if it's big patches, you're going to have that big bare spot anyway. And so you might and you're going to have to renovate it anyway. So why bother trying to kill it first? You're going to kill it when you renovate.
You're right. Okay.
All right.
Okay, super. Timing is good for that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Jim, thanks for the call. Let's see here. We'll go now to Saratoga. Ethan is on. Ethan, go ahead.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my call today. So every year I order some bare root trees to sort of build a backyard orchard. And I've been having really good luck with it. I've got some great Asian pears last year, and they actually produced, which was really great. Well, I'm trying to – this year I got my bare root trees in, and they actually had a few leaves on them. After I planted them, they've lost all their leaves. And I'm worried that the bare root trees aren't going to survive. And it happened to two peach trees and a plum that I have.
Yep. So,
and I'm not seeing a lot of growth.
Yep. So with peach trees and plums in particular, sometimes hardening them off or getting them acclimated, I should say, is a good idea. So you get them bare root, and if they had leaves on them, they've been in shade and cold storage. And now you get them and you put them in full sun, and there's a bit of a shock. So when we do, and some bare roots handle it, but some, like in particular, I know peaches and plants in the Prunus genus tend to like to be a little bit more acclimated. So when we get them, we typically put them in like a very filtered light condition, and then move them towards more and more sun. Ultimately, you want to put them in, you know, close to full sun or all full sun, but it does take a little bit of acclimation. So my guess is that they probably got a little bit of a shock. There's probably enough stored energy in there to probably refoliate and continue to grow, but that's what I suspect is going on with those guys.
Yeah, we have these couple of days where it's kind of the humidity's really low and the wind and sun are up, and that's never good for bare root trees to re-sprout again. Yeah. But once we, and it's cool, so once we get into some nice warm humid weather, that's when you should see some better activity. You know, if you could, you know, make sure that they're well watered, right? Make sure that, you know, you don't want them to dry out. But also, when you're out there watering, just spritz the wood a little bit, the heads, the stems,
yep.
just to temporarily create a little humidity around the stem. If you did that, you know, okay. If you did it once a day, you don't have to water the root system once a day, but
right.
If you spritz them once a day, that can be helpful. And we are going to get some sort of 3 or 4 or 5 cloudy, rainy days, I think, by the weekend.
Yeah, which will help.
Oh, perfect.
And that's what we want. That's what you want. You want that kind of weather to get them to resprout.
Yeah, and we do the same thing you just mentioned. We typically spray them with water, like once a day if we can.
Yeah.
It tends to keep those branches hydrated.
Ethan, thanks for the call. Dave in Pittsfield writes in, and I love this question. We talked about soil temperature earlier in the show. Dave writes, how many inches down do you do the measurement for soil temperature?
Wherever the roots are going to be. So for vegetable crops, 2 to 3 inches down. We have a weather station on our farm that's tied in with the official weather network throughout New York State, and the soil temperatures are at 2, 10, and 20 inches. But 2 to 3 inches, wherever those roots are going to be.
Can you use a meat thermometer? Not joking.
Yeah.
Yeah. I use, that's what I use, actually. Yep. Not the same one I use on my steaks, though, right?
No.
There's also these compost thermometers. They're like this long.
Yeah.
You can just carry it around. And
compost gets very hot, right?
That's the idea, yes. Yeah.
Yep.
You can tell I do a lot of gardening. Let's go to Valencia. Dennis, you're on. Dennis.
Thank you. my question is about strawberries. But before that, spring isn't spring without fiddleheads and dandelions.
Agreed. Absolutely.
About the strawberries, it's been a couple of years now. I was told to get rid of the mother plants and to plant the runners. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, that's exactly how commercial growers manage their strawberry plantings. They get bare root plants that get planted 1 year, and those are called the mother plants. And then they put out all these runners with the daughters and they both produce fruit the following year. Usually what we would do is after harvest is over, we cut off all the leaves and then till down the middle of the row so that we're basically taking out the mother plants and leaving the daughter plants. And as long as there's not many weeds in there, you can just keep that procedure going. We would turn over our strawberry plantings about every 3 to 4 years. They'll last longer than that if they're well cared for and not very many weeds. But they rejuvenate themselves all on their own through their growth process.
And so the mother plants are taken out every year?
Every few years?
Yeah.
It every year. You can wait every 2 years, but you get smaller fruit if you don't take them out every year.
Dennis, we're going to have to leave it there. I'm so sorry we're out of time here. Very quickly, crew, Mary writes in, how successfully will seeding grass over well-raked crabgrass? How successful would you be seeding grass over well-raked crabgrass? We only have about 30 seconds.
So you want to loosen the soil that the crabgrass is rooted into. Now, the crabgrass is dead right now. It's just this brown patch.
Yeah.
But loosening that soil up really well and throwing some perennial seed is a good idea. Yes, the crabgrass will also germinate, but you're sort of creating some competition.
So crabgrass is brown right now.
It is. Yeah,
that's
an annual.
Lawn.
So.
Yeah. Yep.
Now I know why. All right, Dale Isla Riggs, how do people find the Berry Patch?
Right now online at theberrypatch.net, and starting next week, first weekend of May, we'll be at the Troy Farmers Market every Saturday.
And again, thanks for coming yesterday.
It was fantastic fun.
Greg Ward, how do we find Ward's Nursery?
Oh, yeah, we're over there in Great Barrington, Massachusetts at 600 South Main Street, or wardsnursery.com is the website.
And thank you as well for being at the show yesterday. Fred Breglia, thanks for hosting that thing. How do people find the Landis Arboretum, which is amazing?
It's at 174 Lape Road in Esperance, New York, and our website, is landisarboretum.org.
You guys were great yesterday, and if you want to hear how great they were, we'll be playing it on Memorial Day. Support comes from Ward's Nursery at Garden Center, Great Barrington, for native trees. Oh, that's, I shouldn't have read that one. Well, generally we don't read them when the people are on the show, but Ward's Nursery, it's wardsnursery.com, as Greg just said. Sorry about that. Capital Region Classical at Union College presenting British baritone Roderick Williams in Schubert's song cycle, The Fair Miller Maid, without interruption. She never was interrupted. Sunday, April 26th, 5 p.m., capitalregionclassical.org. All right, an inauspicious end to Gardening Show 2 in 24 hours. Thanks again for listening. Thanks for the calls. These folks will be back in 2 weeks. We do the show every 2 weeks in the warm weather months. Thanks to our engineer, Mike Bowen. Susie Checkeye screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, we welcome back Shannon Hayes from Sapbush Hollow Farm. And we'll see you tomorrow at 2.